You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. There is some big changes afoot in leadership at Idaho Power. This is the publicly traded utility that serves more than 500,000 people. Last week, CEO Darrell Anderson announced that he's retiring after leading the company since 2014. He's overseen several initiatives, including the company's shift away from coal. Now, at the same time, the company announced that current president, Lisa Grow, will take over the helm come June 1st. She will be the first woman to lead Idaho Power. Darrell and Lisa are joining us live in studio today to talk about their vision for the company. Thank you both.
Great to be here, Gemma.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Okay, so Darrell, congratulations.
Thank you.
On your retirement. First, the really hard question. What will you do with all of your newfound time and freedom?
You know, that is a great question people have asked me. One of the first things I'm going to do is reacquaint myself with my spouse, my lovely bride, Lori. And then I'm going to actually do nothing for a little while. You know, I've been on a treadmill for 41 years, going pretty hard. And so I'm going to just take some time to sort of get myself back where I need to be. So, but after that, I'm going to continue. The good news is I get a chance to stay on the Idaho Power board. I'm also on another board. And then I will likely also spend a little bit more time in some of the nonprofit world, which I've done in my past life. So, but I'm not going to do it right away.
You know, what's interesting, I think, with both of you is that the longevity that you both bring. I mean, Darrell, you've been with the company for 24 years.
Right.
I mean, CEO since 2014. Lisa, you've been with Idaho Power since 1987. I mean, in this day and age, it's really more common for people to kind of jump from, you know, job to job. Why have both of you stayed so long? And I'll start with you, Lisa.
Well, a funny story. I didn't think I would ever work for Idaho Power. My grandfather worked for Idaho Power, and so I just thought it was kind of old and dusty equipment, and
why would I do that?
Yeah. I thought I was going to go to Silicon Valley and build computers. That was back in the 80s when that was just starting. And so just when you say I will never do something, the universe will humble you, and that is exactly what happened. I did a senior design project at the University of Idaho with Idaho Power. And it was just this great project. They asked me to come back and install it. And I just never left. It's a great company. I love what we do. The people are extraordinary. They're the finest people that I've ever met. This man to my left being a great example. And so it was the work, it was the people, and just our mission. So 32 years went really fast. Although I've had, this will be my 14th job. So it's sort of, it's a very complex business that a lot of people don't realize. And so I've got to do all kinds of things that were just kept me challenged and interested and curious. And here I am.
And what about you, Darrell?
Well, first of all, she didn't say, as if you go into Lisa's office, she has a picture of her grandfather in her office at one of our substation locations here just in town. And so she looks at that, and I go into her office, and she smiles, and we both smile, and it's kind of a neat thing that she's there. So I'll just go back. I mean, I've been at Idaho Power for 24 years, and Idaho Power time, that's sort of a short time because we have a lot of long-tenured employees. And it's, I think to what Lisa said, it's the people. It really comes down to the people, mm-hmm. the quality of the people that you get a chance to work with every day. And it's from across the service territory, which is even better. It's just a great diverse group of people.
I want to talk about some of the initiatives that you oversaw as CEO and beginning with the move away from coal. Mm-hmm. Now, although Idaho doesn't, you know, we don't have coal plants within our borders, we do use energy that's generated from plants in other states. So where does that drawdown from coal-fired plants in Nevada, Wyoming, and Oregon stand right now?
So we introduced almost a year ago now, we introduced our Clean Today, Cleaner Tomorrow program, 100% clean by 2045. So we are in the early stages of that, but it fits with what we've been doing for quite some time. We, at the end of 2019, we're out of one of the units in the Valmy facility. At the end of this year, we will be out of the Boardman facility in Oregon. And then, as based on our current projections, we could be out of some of the Bridger units as early as 2022. Another unit at Valmy in 2025, and then thereafter until theoretically by the end of 2030, we could be out of all of our coal plants, depending if the plan works out as it's in the current integrated resource plan.
You know, in a profile that has been back in 2014 when you assumed the role, writer Rocky Barker wrote, and this is a quote about openness. He says, when it comes to engaging with shareholders and renewable energy activists, How would you rate yourself on your tenure when it comes to that openness?
I would say that is probably one of the things people will look back and say I was pretty open. And the fact of the matter is we need to hear from everyone. And I think that's the important component of what my job is to allow those conversations to take place, because we learn, I think the folks that we talk to learn, and we probably both move. And generally probably likely move closer to the middle and basically likely better to a better answer. And I think that's what's happened over these last 6 years or so, is we've had a lot of dialogue with a lot of people, and they've had impacts on the direction we're going. I think we've also kind of changed some of those perspectives too, from some of what I sometimes might call my adversaries. I call them constituents. But it's I will tell you, my first annual meeting, I went solo. Was pretty contentious. Probably had 20 people lined up in the back of the room. We absolutely heard from every single one of those folks. We allowed them to speak, allowed them to share their concerns. Now they come back today and they're more of a supporter and ally, complimenting the company versus maybe some of the comments they made in that first meeting.
And to both of you, I mean, let's be honest, it hasn't always been sunshine and roses, right? I mean, you as you mentioned, you know, you've had some critics, one being maybe the solar power arena. Mm-hmm. So what have you learned in that conversation about net metering with groups like the Idaho Conservation League? Mm-hmm. And I'll ask either of you. So, Lisa, if you want to start.
Sure. Well, you know, our customers are changing, you know, what their priorities are. And I feel like, you know, what we're trying to do is take a 100-year-old regulatory regime and catch it up with what's needed today based on what our customers want. So it may seem there are those that, because we're trying to make those changes, that they feel like we're against solar, and that's just not the truth. We are trying to help everyone be successful doing what they want to do, but we don't want cost shifts to occur to other customers that are not choosing to self-generate. And we also are a little frustrated with some of the information that people are making decisions they're getting from third parties that is not correct. And so we're not sure they're really making the decision based on good economic analysis. And so they're very upset when they find that things can change. So we're still trying to work through it, and we will. And we will work with our friends over at ICL. We'll work with the people that have been they've now been grandfathered, so we can work our way through the problems. But a lot of it is misunderstanding. A lot of it is passionate discourse. But I believe that we're going to find our way through it.
So it sounds like it goes back to that whole idea of openness, Daryl, that you talked about in 2014.
Right. One of the things I pride our organization on is being transparent. We've worked hard on this. We're willing to talk about anything, open up whatever we need to open up, and have a conversation about it. Now, we may, at the end of the day, agree to disagree, but that's okay. As long as people have had the opportunity to say what they say, put their position on the table, and then have an opportunity to talk about it. And then again, we generally agree when it's all said and done, but there are times where we will agree to disagree.
I want to shift the conversation a little bit because, Lisa, we all know that there are large disparities when it comes to the number of women who are holding CEO positions, mm-hmm. and this is across the country. What does it mean to you specifically to be the first woman who will hold the title of CEO at Idaho Power?
Well, it is humbling and a huge honor. It's something that, you know, certainly I have been a woman in an industry that has been traditionally male dominated. An interesting fun fact is that the energy industry today has the largest percentage of female CEOs right now. It's about 24%, which is outpaces industry at large. But I get so many, you know, lovely messages from the women at Idaho Power and outside on what it means to them. And so there's some days that it feels like I really want to do a good job for them because they have supported me. But I will also say it's been enlightened men that have really helped me get here, because there weren't that many women in the industry when I came up. So I feel like it's my job to continue to blaze the trail, and hopefully we'll get to a day where people won't ever have to say that.
And isn't that the truth, right?
Yep.
That we won't have to say, oh, you're a woman holding this position.
Right. No more non-traditional roles.
Right.
We'll just have roles.
Gemma, I'd like to share a point on that, because Lisa and I do employee meetings across the property, and we do about 40 of these a year. And I was at an employee meeting, and we were talking about Lisa, and one of our line crew folks commented, and to your point, is you know, Lisa has earned this opportunity. Not that she's a woman, not that she's a man. She's earned it because of the work that she has done and the success that she has had. And this is coming from somebody working in the field, working on our crews, who I think, I know that had a big impact on Lisa at the time. But it's the absolute right answer for Lisa as the right person at the right time, given where the company is today and where the industry is today. She has a technology background. She's an engineer by background. And as we look forward, a big piece of the challenges that we see coming for coming at us is going to be in the technology arena. And that is a passion for Lisa's. And given that, given her leadership skills and the work she's done, she's absolutely the right person at the right time.
Thank you.
Well, and there's something to be said, too, about hopefully as we see more women in these roles, as we mentioned, wouldn't it be a great day where we don't have to put that caveat
absolutely
on there?
Right. Yeah, it'll be a while, but we're getting there.
Yeah.
It's one
slowly
thing at
but
a time.
Surely, right? that train's chugging along, right?
Exactly.
So Daryl mentioned, I mean, you are an engineer by trade. So before you moved into management, that's what you did. So what advice, though, would you give to young people coming up, especially in the STEM field? Because that's also something where we see more women dropping out of STEM in college, even when they've got like A and B averages.
Yes. And I have such a passion. I'm so glad you asked me this question because, first of all, what I tell people, I speak to groups, boys, girls, whoever will listen. STEM, in my mind, is just a very disciplined way to solve problems. So it doesn't have to have that, oh, that's only for nerds, or it's hard, or it's not fun. When you put it into perspective of, well, gosh, you can invent something that's never been invented. You can solve a problem that has, you know, vexed the rest of us. And it's just a way to think through it. And it's a way to use science. And there's this great program up at U of I where it really engineering scholars can come in as freshmen and do real projects, so you don't get stuck in the rut of calculus and all this, you know, academics, really, really theoretic, that you're just like, oh my gosh, when am I ever going to use this,
And I promise someday it'll change.
Right.
Just
and
get
so
through these 4 years.
Getting them into something where they can apply it right away and really getting, you know, back into grade school. It's like the fourth grade where young girls will start to believe they can't. And so we have to be much more mindful of that and keep them engaged and show them what can happen. And so I was just literally talking to a woman on the ski lift at Tamarack this weekend, and she was saying her daughter was interested in engineering. So I just, I mean, the poor woman, I thought I was going to ski chase her down and go, please let me talk to her.
Where is she?
Yes, we'll sign her up. But it is it's something that's important to our economy, it's in our culture, our communities, that we just simply have to be all hands on deck to find a way to keep kids coming through it, because the technical jobs that are going to be available will depend on it. And so it's a real problem that we need to solve. And I think when everybody looks at it and kind of leans in, I think we'll find a way. And across the state, there are so many amazing teachers and programs and the Girl Scouts and other organizations that see it as well. But it is, I would say to any young person that is interested, do it. You will never regret it. And it is such a basis for, you can go into medicine, you can go into, you know, gaming, you can go into, you know, whatever you want. That engineering basis can launch you 1,000 different places.
Well, and you bring up a good point that there are so many jobs out there that are going unfilled. And guess what? Boys can't just fill them and girls can't just fill them. I mean, there are too many jobs.
Right. It's got to be all of the kids have got to be ready to go. And if you don't like STEM or you want to do something else, that is awesome. I remember my youngest, or actually it was my oldest daughter, one day came home from school and said, you know, we're just not going to be engineers. And I was like, you know, you're 8. Why are you giving up now?
Yeah.
I mean, what happened? And she was saying, well, we just don't like it. And I was like, well, she had always talked about being a nurse. Mm-hmm. And then when she got into middle school, fractions, just she hated fractions. And I was like, well, when you give medicine someday, are you just going to make up how much you give them? Or are you going to figure it out, how much a baby needs versus how much a grown-up needs? And anyway, she is now a really successful ICU nurse at St. Al's, and she gets her fractions, and she's
now still
a health engineer. Exactly. That's what I tell her. You're not a nurse. You're a health engineer.
Right.
But it was that love of science that brought her there. So I think it's sometimes they need that encouragement.
Right. How are the two of you going to make this transition work? Because June 1st, I mean, you Take over, Lisa.
Right. So this isn't this wasn't a decision that was made in haste. This has been a decision that's been worked on for quite a number of years. When I first stepped into this job 6 years ago, my first order of business was to ensure that I have a successor in place when that time does come. And so we take succession planning very seriously at Idaho Power, a very robust process, giving people opportunities. And so Lisa and I have been working closely together for the last few years with the expectation that this was the likely scenario that would play out. So we will continue to work together very closely over the next few months, but it's not what we're doing over the next 3 months. It's more what we've been doing over the last couple of years that really sets the foundation for this succession to be seamless. So our whole goal in life is to make these transitions seamless. When I stepped in for my predecessor, the idea was that would be seamless. And so we work really hard on making sure that happens because it's important for the business not to have these kind of difficult transitions that would take place. You see that in other entities, and I think that causes issues. So we worked really hard on this. Lisa and I have been, you know, kind of connected at the hip for the last few years. Like I said, we do a lot of things together. I learned from her. She learns from me as we've been kind of going through this process. So I expect a very seamless transition to take place come June 1st.
We also have a great team in place. Right. And so that will really help me because they're awesome at what they do. Daryl also just built a new house about a block from mine. So
perfect.
I can just run by anytime. So that's my plan.
See, there you go. Mm-hmm. I want to thank both of you for coming in and congratulations to
both of you.
We've been talking with Idaho Power CEO Daryl Anderson and President Lisa Groh. Lisa will take over the role of CEO when Daryl retires in June. I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters.